All right, welcome everyone to Mo'adon Ivri, Club Hebrew. Good to see everybody here on this nice, warm Thursday, and thanks for coming up. We are just at kind of the beginning of 1 Samuel chapter 7. We're about ready to start verse 4. We had talked a little bit last week about the false gods that Israel was purging from its midst, and that's where we kind of pick up the story with verse 4. Vayasiru b'nei Yisrael et ha-ba'alim ve'et ha-shtarot. And notice the children of Israel removed, notice that that's a hifil form from sur, and it becomes transitive, it's intransitive in the call, it simply means in the call to turn away. Someone turns away from something. Here, the children of Israel removed the Baalim and the Ashtarot, and I showed you guys a picture of that last week. Vayavdu et Yahweh, and they served Yahweh levado, him alone. So levad plus the third masculine singular suffix, him alone. Okay, and that kind of ends the paragraph. Then we go on to verse 5. Vayomer Shemuel, then Samuel said, Kivtu et kol Yisrael ha mitzpata. Okay, what kind of form is kivtu? Just looking at it there, kind of looks strange. Could be a PL form, right? The other possibility is that it's an imperative, a call imperative, and that's what it is. Notice that there's no dogish in the bait as you might expect from a PL form. So Samuel said, gather et kol Israel, all of Israel, ha mitzpata, to mizpah. Notice there's a locative hey at the end of this form. And we stop with the atnach there because it's the completion of thought. Come on in, you guys. Mizpah, remember, is one of the kind of major cities that you will see in the books of Judges and Samuel, along with Bethel, Ramah, Gibeah, and a few of those other places. And actually, towards the end of this chapter, we will see a number of those things mentioned again that figure very prominently in the narrative. So Mizpah was probably, must have been a kind of a central meeting place, and a place where the sanctuary probably traveled intermittently during the year. Okay. Now notice how he finishes up. Et palel ba'ad kem el Yahweh. Notice how you have an imperative kibzu followed by a vav plus an imperfect form. And very often, and I think this is the case here, remember, it indicates what kind of relationship. How do you translate or understand the et palel? Remember, no following imperative? Very often it's purpose or result. So you might translate, so that I might make intercession ba'ad kem on your behalf. Okay? To Yahweh. Alright, any questions on verse 5? Alright, verse 6. Vayikav tu hamizpata vayish avumaim. Oh, this is kind of weird. Vayish peku lifne Yahweh. Okay. Notice the form, verse 6, the first verb, vayikav tu. What form is that? What conjugation?
Nifal.
From the same root as the imperative in verse 5. Notice, to gather. Alright? So notice that in the call, you have a direct object. Gather all Israel. See? Gather grapes. Gather figs. Kavats. The nifal becomes an intransitive. Notice in English, we probably wouldn't translate they were gathered without an agent. But in English, we have an intransitive meaning for gather too. We can gather figs, or people can gather at the stadium, see? So that's how the nifal is. And very often, you have this thing where the nifal is an active intransitive. And translate like that. So they gathered to Mizpah.
Is it just for this verb or for other verses?
No, there's other verbs that this works with as well. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of some offhand, and I can't. Nothing comes to mind, but there are a number of them where the nifal actually has an active intransitive. So notice in English, and again, this is kind of an English style. You wouldn't just translate, "Oh, it's nifal passive." See, the people were gathered. I mean, we could do that, but it's not our usual way of talking. See, we would usually say the people were gathered by someone if an agent is expressed. But notice that's not what happened here. It's not like a guy went around herding them. It's just that they came to that place. Right? So it's a better English translation, the active intransitive.
But couldn't you say they were gathered by themselves?
Or you could say something like this, they gathered themselves, but see, you're still using kind of an active intransitive meaning there. All right. I'm just saying English style, it would not be as customary to say that. And it just shows a different function of the nifal besides a strict passive. Okay? I think it's a lot like the in Greek, you know, that aorist passive form is sometimes an active intransitive meaning. Alright? So you have the same kind of thing with the nifal. Okay. Vayishavu. Notice the root is sha'av here. It's probably a less known word to you. It means to draw, and it's usually used with an object, water, like this. And they drew water, like if you draw it from a well. Okay. Vayishpeku, from shafak, another call, and they poured it, lifnei Yahweh, before Yahweh. This is obscure. This is the only mention of this kind of custom in the Bible. So we don't know what the heck it's talking about. We assume that lifnei Yahweh means in the vicinity of the sanctuary, you know, the tabernacle, and was part of their ritual for their worship service, see? But what it means and what its significance is, no one knows. Okay? The next clause then, vayatzumu bayom hahu, and they fasted. What's the root of that first verb, yatzum? Tzum. See, tzum, to fast. And they fasted in that day, vayomru, and they said sham, and they said there, chatanu ladanai, we have sinned against Yahweh. Okay, we have sinned against Yahweh. Atnat, pause. Always remember that. Vayishpot Shemuel et b'nei Yisrael ba mitzpah. Okay, notice the root, shafat, which you normally know as the gloss to judge. But notice that it probably has a little different meaning here. The use of the word, first of all, connects us with the book of Judges. Remember all those like Gideon, Samson, and all those guys were shofates, delivered the people from the enemies, but they also functioned kind of as rulers. So that you might want to translate this, either Samuel judged the people, in other words, solved the issues that they might have amongst each other, but also had a sense of rulership, so that he ruled. You could translate this, Samuel ruled over the children of Israel at Mizpah. See, in other words, that was kind of his place from which he governed. And we see this meaning with Moses in Exodus 18, in which the people come to Moses and Moses yishpot, he judged the people by yishpot, he judged the people. Namely, it doesn't necessarily mean that he only acted as this judge in a courtroom, but in a more wide-ranging thing, he ruled them, had authority over them, acted as a magistrate, for example. Okay? And that's probably what the situation is being described here. All right? Verse 7. Vayishma'u pelishtim. Oh, here's good. And the Philistines heard. Now notice after a verb of seeing or hearing, you very often have a key clause that is the object. And that's what you have here. The Philistines heard what? Here's the object. Ki hit kaptsu b'nei Yisrael ha-mitzpata. They heard that the children of Israel had gathered. Now notice here you have the hit pael rather than the nifal. You see the same thing with the word to hide. Sometimes to hide yourself is nifal, sometimes hit pael. So here, you translate it, I think, the same way. I don't know what the distinction would be. The children, when they heard that the children of Israel had gathered at Mizpah, see, Vaya'alu Sarne Pelishtim. The princes, we've seen that word before, the leaders of the Philistines from Allah went up to Israel. Or maybe went up against Israel, as we will see. Alright? Because look what happens next. Vayishme'u b'nei Israel. And the children of Israel, the Israelites, heard. Okay, now notice that. Vav consecutive, now another Vav consecutive. Vayireu. What's the root of that one? Vayireu. It could be one of two things just on the face of it.
They were afraid.
And they were afraid from what root?
From
From Yah-Rah. What else, just if you didn't have the context, what else looks possible for this as the root? From Ra to see. So notice, to help you, the Masoretes have put a little metheg after the hirik. Notice the va-yi-re-u, so that you pause a little. And it's just clarifying for you that it's not, and they saw, but and they were afraid, mipnei, before the Philistines. They were afraid, I mean, we would probably say of the Philistines, but they were afraid before the Philistines. All right. Now notice how here, another Hebrew style, you have the first clause, Vayishma'u, as a temporal clause, but they're just juxtaposed with two vav consecutives. So in English, we'd probably subordinate that first clause. When the children of Israel heard, they became afraid. See that? In Hebrew, you have vav consecutive. In English style, we would subordinate the first clause, suggest that it's a temporal clause in relationship to the main clause, they became afraid. Okay? Any questions through verse 7? All right? Verse 8. Vayomru b'nei Yisrael el Shemuel. Then the children of Israel said to Samuel, oh, here, al tacharesh mimenu. They do the right thing, actually. Notice the al tacharesh. What's the root of tacharesh? Charash. Good. Charash. What conjugation? It's a little trickier here. It's actually a hifil, but it's a shortened imperfect. It's a jussive form. Second person jussive. Instead of tacharish, it's tacharesh. And it means to, in the call, to be silent, in the hifil, to keep silence. So notice it's, do not keep silent from us. And now it adds a second thing, mizok el Yahweh Eloheinu. From, now here's zeok, call, infinitive construct from za'ak, to cry out. So do not be silent from us, from crying out to Yahweh our God. All right. So we probably say something like this. Do not neglect us, or something like that. Do not neglect us. And then again, you have to understand the verb. Do not neglect to cry out for us. See? So notice how those two, do not be silent, keep silent from us. And now you have to understand the verb in the next phrase. It's just kind of juxtaposed. Notice how the people are speaking, how you would speak if you're kind of excited. See, you wouldn't necessarily speak in smooth language, and you would probably speak in kind of a shorthand. See, so that's what they do. Do not takaresh mimenu mizok. The real request, don't stop crying to Yahweh for us. See? So notice that they recognize that Samuel has this relationship to God, that he functions as kind of an intermediary, intercessor for them. So he speaks God's word to them, and he also brings their pleas to God on their behalf. All right, so notice how he's functioning here. Notice the next word, Vayoshi'enu. That's from a common root that you all know. From Yasha, to save. Notice it is a hifil form. The yod is gone, so it's Yoshi'enu, as we often get. All right, so notice it says, don't neglect to cry out to Yahweh our God, so that he might save us. Yoshi'enu. So notice, following this negative imperative, you have the vav plus imperfect again. Basically the same structure that we got up earlier with the et paleo in verse 5. Okay? So that he might save us from the hand of the Philistines. Yoshi'enu. Any questions about verse 9? Or verse 8? Okay, verse 9. Vayikach Shemuel telei chala v'chat. And Samuel took, what's the root? Lakach, good. And Samuel took a telei chala. That's literally a sheep, or a lamb, I'm sorry, a lamb. And notice it's in construct. The form is tala. All right, lamb, chalav, a lamb of fat, or milk, I guess. So it's usually translated as an idiom, a suckling lamb. All right, maybe it's referring to a young lamb that's still not weaned. Okay. Now notice how he uses the echad as an indefinite article. We'll see that a couple times here. Interesting stylistic point. Samuel took, so I wouldn't emphasize took one lamb, but I would translate it more indefinite. Took a suckling lamb. Vaya'al lehu ola. And he offered, notice the strange form on ya'al lehu. What's that kibbutz doing under there? See, notice it's directing you to a reading, the Koray reading, Ya'aleho, as a third masculine singular suffix. And so it's a hiphil, and he offered it. Okay, Ya'aleho, as an ola, as a burnt offering, a kalil, a whole one. Kalil from, you've noticed the root kol, all, every. So you ought to offer a burnt offering, a whole one, to Yahweh. All right? Vayishak Shemuel el Yahweh be'ad Yisrael. And Samuel cried to Yahweh be'ad on behalf of Israel. All right? Now I want you to notice the style here in the next few verses. Vaya'anehu Yahweh. And Yahweh answered him. Okay? Notice what the author is going to do here. He gives you the conclusion and then elaborates. Because the first question to come to your mind when you read this and Yahweh answered him is what? What question? How did he answer him? What do you mean he answered him? See? So it actually gives you that and then backfills it. And it does that a little later in a few verses. Okay, everybody see that? So notice now what we're going to do in verse 10 is not go on to something new, but kind of elaborate what he means by Yahweh answered him. Vayehi Shemuel Ma'alecha Ola. Okay, you can almost translate, that is to say, Samuel Ma'ale. Everybody see that? That's a hiphil participle from Allah. And the object is Ha'ola. Okay? That is to say, as Samuel was offering the burnt offering, okay, U'pelishtim Nigshu, the Philistines drew near La Mimlacha for war against Israel. Okay? That should be part of the relative clause, or the circumstantial clause. That is to say, while Samuel was offering the burnt offering, and the Philistines drew near for war. See, Nagash, that is a Nifal perfect. It's an interesting thing with this word. When you use an imperfect form, it's the call form. Yigash, Tigash. When you use the perfect or participle, it's the Nifal form. That's why you have that Nigshu with the Hirik, or the Dagesh preceded by the short vowel, the Hirik. Okay? So, as Samuel was offering up the burnt offering and the Philistines drew near for war against Israel, pause. Here's the main clause. Va yarem Yahweh. This is the root ra'am, to thunder. And it's a hiphil. The Lord thundered the kol gadol with a great voice by Yom Hahu in that day. Al pelishtim, against the Philistines. Okay, now notice how it's describing how Yahweh answered. Okay, it's kind of going back. Va yehu meim. That's from the root hamam, one of those pesky double eins. And it means to throw into confusion. And he threw them into confusion. Yehomeim from hamam, a call, imperfect vav consecutive, plus a third masculine plural suffix. And he threw them into confusion. Vayinag fu lifnei Israel. And they were nagaft. And they were routed. Again, see what conjugation is yinag fu. Very regular here. Nifal form. See the big comets under the nun. And they were routed before Israel. Alright? So, it's very interesting. Here's another thing where you have this conclusion, and they were routed before Israel. And now verse 11 goes into more details about the rout. Okay, so see the style. And this is kind of typical. And beware of this when you're reading narrative, of them to make a conclusion and then backfill it with more details.
Is this sort of a storytelling type?
Yeah, it's kind of a, right.
Rather than the story.
See, we might do it the other way. We might say, like if you go back to verse 9, Samuel cried out to Israel, and the Lord thundered with a great voice, and et cetera, et cetera, and then conclude, and so Yahweh answered them. But here it's kind of opposite. So you have this reaching the conclusion, then going back, and then reaching the conclusion, going back. So it's not kind of strictly linear like the Western mind is more accustomed to doing, but it's more circular. It evidences a more circular. And you get a much more circularity, for example, when you read the book of Deuteronomy, et cetera, et cetera. And it's much less Western and more indicative of other cultures. I was talking to a couple of years ago, I'll never forget this, Ron Mudge, who was a missionary in the Ivory Coast for a number of years, was doing translation work, and he said that what made perfect sense to the people that were helping him translate and learn the language, he said he would be reading stuff, he'd say, this doesn't make sense to me, it kind of goes all over the place. And they say, no, it makes perfect sense to us. And as soon as he read the book of Deuteronomy in class, he goes, well, that's what was happening in the Ivory Coast, where I was translating stuff. They think much more in a kind of a circular fashion, see, whereas we are strict linearity. So it's kind of, you can miss something, and for us, what they are describing seems like they're kind of going all over the map, but they eventually get back to the point. And we've seen this already in the narrative, where someone will be introduced, right? And you kind of leave it, and then you come back and it's elaborated. So it's happening on a number of levels, and here you have it on happening on a more micro level, in which you just have a summary, and then with a couple of verses kind of fill in the details. So notice verse 11 about the routed. That is, Vayetzu Anshei Yisrael, the men of Israel went out from Mitzpah, Vayirdefu, and they pursued the Philistines, Vayakum, and they struck them. Again, a Hiphil from Naka. And they struck them, Ad Mitachat Levekar. Up to, well, it's literally, until under, from under the city named Betkar. Something like, and they struck them up to the point below Betkar. See, and Betkar is a city. Or, some village or something. See? So notice that the 11 describes the routing a little more. Now in verse 12, you move on in the narrative. Everybody see that? Any questions about that?
So is this, I guess from a, like a form critical perspective, is there sort of any indication of an oral tradition kind of being moved into the sort of this rhythm?
See, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if it's indicative of the oral nature of it or not. I don't know. You'd have to probably do... I think that you could find studies in which storytelling techniques in other cultures, I'm sure you could, probably make a nice paper actually, storytelling techniques in other cultures, see how they do it, and maybe draw some comparative conclusions here, I don't know. And again, you'd have to check the biblical material, see how often this happens, and on the different ways it happens. But you get the sense when you're reading that it happens on, like I said, a number of different levels. Okay, so Deuteronomy, you read it, just seems kind of sometimes very repetitive. Right. Okay, verse 12. How much time we got? A couple minutes. We'll finish up with this verse. Vayikach Shemuel. Then Samuel took an evan, achad. Notice, again, achad is an indefinite article almost. Took a stone, vayasem, from seam, notice, and he set it, bein ha mitzpah, between mitzpah and between hashem. Alright, now I'm trying to figure out how this worked. It must have been a big stone, and it must have been a bunch of people rolling it, because I can't imagine you just took a little pebble and walked in between the two cities and put them down there. Okay? Vayikra, and he called its name, so that'd be a big stone, right? Couldn't be as little bit. And he called its name Stone of the Help, which we know as Ebenezer. The Stone of Help, really. The Stone of Help. Eben Ha'ezer. Vayomar, and he said, Ad Hena, up to here, Azaranu Yahweh. Yahweh has helped us. Notice that's a simple call, perfect, third masculine singular, plus first common plural suffix. Up to here, up to this point, Yahweh helped us. So it must be a place where the enemy was routed. You know, they were defeated.
So this is a physical location.
Yeah, it seems to be.
Versus a temporal kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Meaning up till this point.
Seems to be.
Time Yahweh has
up to here, yeah. Here's the stone of help.
Okay.
Yeah. Very interesting. Okay. Let's do one more verse since you're all still here. By Yikanu HaPeli's team, and the Philistines were humbled. Kana means to humble. And here's the Niphal. See, the Philistines were humbled. Velo yasfu od. And this is from to add. And they did not add again lavo, to come. And notice again the structure. The infinitive in English would probably be the main verb. And they did not come ever again, not ever again, still again or yet again, bigvul Yisrael, into the border of Israel. Vatehi yad Yahweh. And the hand of Yahweh was against the Philistines, kol yemei Yisrael, all the days of Samuel. Okay? So again, you see the decisive turning away of the enemy. Samuel's functioning very much as a shofet, seems to be. But in a different way, he prayed rather than like Samson, who actually defeated the Philistines, and Deborah, and some of these other judges. It's kind of interesting. Nevertheless, we're going to continue to get stories about Samuel, obviously, through this book.
I think we often forget that Samuel was the last judge.
Yeah,
you know,
see,
we think of him as a prophet.
Yeah, clearly. But he functioned in a number of roles.
Yeah, he
here,
did.
Here you
he
see
did.
His role as shofet,
right.
Clearly kind of being brought out here. Yeah, that's a good point, connecting you back to that book. Any other questions? Yes, Paulo.
What Lavo, what is it? Is it a verb? I missed that one.
Oh, which verse?
The
13. Yeah, Lavo, yeah, I'm sorry. That's an infinitive construct from Bo, to come. Call infinitive construct. Kum, kom would be the infinitive. So here, bo, and bo is the infinitive construct. And that helps you, the lamed in front, because lamed's prepositions are attached to infinitives, not finite verbs.
I was just wondering, why the kum is underneath? It be like
usually, right, okay, that's a good question. The reason you often have commas is because when you have words with one syllable, you often have that comets rather than like a schwa or something you might expect. And I don't know why. Notice there's a little pause there. That might have something to do with it. But very often you will see that comets there. Okay? So it's, I don't know why other than that. Brandon.
Can you ask about the metic in verse 7 again?
Yeah.
How that differentiates you off from...
Okay. Yeah, because notice that... usually with the first yud verb, like yir-u, you'd have two yuds. You'd have va, yir-u. Okay? You can also have it without the yud. If it's without the yud, just take away all the vowel points, it's indistinguishable from the root ra'a. And sometimes in the narrative you will see, I think of the class example I always keep in mind is when Elijah's fleeing from Jezebel after... you know, the incident on Mount Carmel. Mm-hmm. And Jezebel then sends his men afterwards, and then the word is there, and Elijah saw that. Or is it, and Elijah was afraid, etc. And you can have either reading, see. So they can be confused. Now here the context, it's a little harder to take the root ra, and he saw, and they saw before the Philistines. I suppose it's possible. But the method there tells you just to pause a little. Va yir ra. Va. See, whereas if it was from ra'a, it'd be just va yir u. You wouldn't have that pause. And so that's the difference. So sometimes you'll see that.
Is the pause there to support the oral hearing of it?
Yeah, right. In the reading of it,
the visual, right?
Right, there'd be a little difference in pronunciation.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's what it reflects. All right, good. So next week we will start with verse 14 and we'll be able to finish and get into chapter 8 already. Have a good week. Thanks for coming.